Hello, welcome to the OM Podcast, Outwear's podcast all about the mobile industry. My name is Keith Smythe, and I'm joined by my co-host and all-around top fellow, Mr. Kent Humphreys. How are you, Kent?
Top of the morning to you.
Top of the morning.
Very well, thank you.
Thank you. We have a very special show to present today. We'll be wrapping up Apple's 25th Worldwide Developers Conference. Apple have presented us with a smorgasbord of delicious new ingredients, and now that they've had some time to stew, we can all discuss this meal as a whole.
Yum.
To help us chew the fat, we have our returning PM and marketing guru, Lucia Vong. Hi, Luce.
Hi.
Welcome.
Good to be back.
That was almost like, you know, on play school or something. You're like, hello, Luce.
Hi.
Hello, Luce. Luce brought Big Ted. And last but not least, we have a real live conference attendee with us today, iOS developer Mika Huynh. Mika, welcome.
Hello. I'm still from San Francisco. Hello. Actually, that's a lie. I'm actually in the office.
Sorry, there's a bit of lag, Mika. What was that?
What time is it there?
It is time for me to be asleep.
How long have you been back for?
I actually came back on Monday morning, so I've had 2.5 days here.
Did you fly in and straight into work?
No.
Because you're hardcore.
I was going to, but it was the Queen's birthday. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. Usually, the last 2 years, WWDC has been over the Queen's birthday. So, if you go, you just like miss out on a holiday, you know, a public holiday. It's perfectly timed this year.
They did it for me. Yeah.
Well, Queen just changes her birthday. She is changed randomly, isn't it? Queen's birthday. So, Mika, tell us how you and Bjorn was the other person who got to go. Tell us how you were the lucky people who got to go to live the developer's dream.
Well, to tell this story, I'll probably have to tell you about Outwear Mobile's magical lamp.
I was hoping you were going to say interpretive dance, but keep going. This is interesting.
So, you know how this year it was the first time they had the lottery for the dub tickets? You pretty much get offered a chance to buy the tickets. Bjorn and I both failed to get a ticket in the first round.
Ba-bow.
Yeah, so we were quite disappointed. So after crying for about a week, I got an email from Gideon saying, hey, we rubbed the magic lamp and now you get tickets. So let's go. And Bjorn and I said, yay!
And by rub the magic lamp, you mean we have a relationship with Apple?
That's all hush-hush. So, yeah.
A magic relationship with Apple.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really good. So, what was it like? Have you been to a big conference before?
I have been to, you know, Yale conference, which is a lot smaller. I've been to local meetups here where you got your local chapter of, you know, iOS developers. But I've never been to a conference of that scale. And OMG, there were like so many people, like seas of bearded WWDC jacket wearing guys and some gals. Like, yeah, it was crazy. I don't even know what to do.
Were you amazed by the queuing?
I was amazed, upset by the queuing.
Frustrated.
Yeah.
So what's the queuing? Just normal lining up?
Just to get into anything, there's a queue. Tell us about queuing up for the keynote.
Sure. So, I arrived on Sunday afternoon and after joining the Australian-New Zealand meetup drinks, don't know to how late that night, but pretty much the next morning after having only 7 hours sleep for the last 40 hours, we queued up at 5 o'clock. We woke up and left the hotel at 5 o'clock in the morning and queued up at 5:40, I think.
So, how many so Moscone is like a big sort of city block building.
Yes.
How many edges of the city block were you back from the front?
If you can imagine a C, so, you know, the
letter C. Pacific. Yeah, okay, that's an ocean.
So, the left border, the bottom border, the top border of Moscone West Center was had the line. But then it then wraps again, and we were in the wrap. there was at least 1,000 people in front of us, and it was cold.
And you got there at 5:40 a.m. Yep.
After no sleep.
After no sleep.
Did they feed you?
in the queue?
Apparently, the years before, you were pretty well fed. Mm. For some reason, I don't know what, we only got Target muesli bars.
Oh.
Yay.
Target to muesli bars?
Yeah.
In America. Yeah. Everything's possible in America.
They're not allowed to sell them in the stores, so they just give them to people who are stuck in lines. Eat this.
But it was good. So after a time, we the line got shortened, so you kind of just filled out. So it used to be you're kind of queuing up in pairs, but then
they kind of squash it up.
Yeah, they squash it up.
They like push everyone forward.
Yep.
And what time did you actually get into the big room?
Ooh, we probably got into the center at around 7:30, 8.
2 hours sitting outside.
Yep. And, oh, but while I was in line, this is probably the best thing that ever happened to me in line. Have you heard of the game 2048?
Yes.
No. Yeah.
I got someone in the line to download it and play. Yeah, that's right.
So you didn't get anyone to download any of our apps. You were spooking other people's apps.
It's like the best game ever.
Why did we send her?
Anyway, so we were in Moscone Center and we're still in line, but then it's nice and toasty and they've given us drinks and they've given us food.
Oh, so there wasn't
food. There was food inside and it was really nice. So it's
Target
all
Milo.
Like, yeah, that was good. We were pretty happy. There's a photo of Bjorn and I like smiling and having our food and breakfast and stuff. So that was good.
You guys looked really cold in those photos.
Ooh,
even inside, it still looked really cold.
So this year, the keynote was really developer friendly. Like there was a lot of announcements for devs. What did it feel like in the room? Was there like real energy? Everyone was tired.
Yeah, I was tired. I was really tired. But all I know is we got, because the presentation was on level 3, we all ran off the escalator in a not safe way. And we were all streaming into the Presidio. I think it's the theater where it was held. And there were just thousands and thousands of developers all rushing towards the front. It was pretty intense. Like the atmosphere was like full on. A lot of thousands of keyed up developers here.
Like one of those Boxing Day sales where like waiting at the door, just give me the bargains.
It's like only Friday they wanted,
the front seats.
Yep.
So did you get to the front?
No, we got about halfway towards the front. I was actually sitting right underneath the screens. So probably not the best seats in the house. But now I know. Now I know. So I can come back next time and I'll either sit in the front or I'll sit all the way in the
back. So it's like when you go see a concert or something at a stadium. If you get right in the front, you're looking firsthand with your own eyeballs. But if you kind of get in the back half, there's big screens. So you're instead of watching the person on stage, you're actually just watching the video footage of them. But you're in the room.
Yes.
And if you squint, you can see the little person up the front. So it still counts.
Yeah, between the heads of the developers in front of me, I could see Craig Goodhair.
Yep.
Yeah, that's his official surname.
Federighi.
No, Mr. Goodhair. And Mr. Cook. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There's a photo we've put up on our blog. It's a selfie of Bjorn and Tim Cook, one of the most like recognized people in the tech world. Did you see that happen? Were you there?
I did.
How did he get a photo with Tim Cook?
Look, I really don't want to say this, especially when Bjorn's not here, but that guy pretty much just knocked me over.
To get a photo.
To get a photo with Tim Cook. And look, if I see him again, I might have to, you might not be able to see him after
But seriously, did Tim Cook like walk off the stage, walk through Presidio and just hang out the front?
It was actually later after the keynote. We were sitting around having lunch in the conference milling area. Mm-hmm. And we were having our lunch. We had the laptops out. We were like busy looking for downloading the betas.
Yep.
And we see a mob of developers. And inside that mob was Mr. Cook. Uh-huh. I like to call him Mr. Cook because I'm polite that way.
Yep. Yeah, it's better than Captain Cook.
Yeah.
People get confused.
We were actually directly in front of, like, in their path. So if we did not move, they would trample over us. So I'm like, okay, cool. We'll grab our laptops. We'll grab our bags. We'll grab our lunch and we'll move to the side. I was busy doing that. And Bjorn was nowhere
Bjorn
to be found.
Bjorn seized the day.
Bjorn left me behind with all of the crap that we had. And the next
Bjorn
thing I know, he celebrates.
Fellow.
And then he comes back. Wait, you know, he comes back. And I'm like, what are you doing? I'm like, he's busy on his phone. And
Is he shaking?
What do you call it? Enhancing his selfie photo to make sure it looks perfect before he sends it to you guys. Yeah, so... Yeah.
Very impressive. I remember like 2 years ago, Scott Forstall doing a similar thing. And it was like groupies at a rock concert. Like it's like, how do you turn a grown man into a teenager? Like put an executive in front of them. Like, oh my God, he's right there. I've seen him in the blogs. He's here.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, so you went to the keynote.
Yep.
You saw the keynote.
Mm-hmm.
It was electric. It was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
There was good hair on the stage.
Yep.
It was good. What else did you do? Was there what happened afterwards? You were there for 5 days, Kent tells me.
Oh, right.
Just so- like assume you know, not everyone has been to a big developer conference.
I know nothing.
Oh, okay. Well, no one forewarned me about how intensive everything was. They were like, Monday was fun. You've got your keynote, you've got your design awards, and you've got the State of the Union presentations as well. Tuesday to Thursday was full on packed with sessions. So mm-hmm. you learn about all the new changes in the API. Everyone's abuzz about Swift. So there's a lab area, and there's also like an area where you can just connect to the Ethernet and just sit and download everything and just
What's Ethernet? What, none of our computers have Ethernet ports.
Yeah, they have the little adapter there too. But I don't know if I should mention this. The funny thing is some of the Ethernet cables were missing those adapters. So, yeah, I don't know who or what.
Dead.
Yeah, so, yeah, it might have just ran off on their own. I don't know. But everyone was, I don't know if you can say the word high on the podcast, but everyone was high with Swift. Mm-hmm.
They were buzzing.
Yeah, they just wanted to get right into the playground. I'm not sure what they are, like the files.
Yeah, the interactive playground stuff.
Yeah, and just playing with Swift. And
did you?
Swift everything. I did. So immediately on Tuesday, after I went to my first few sessions for the day, I went and got Yosemite installed, got Xcode 6 installed, and just started playing with it.
You installed Yosemite on your work computer?
My personal computer. Yeah, that's right.
Clever.
Always an iOS team lead.
Just checking.
Yeah. So tell us about the sessions. Like, it's intense, right? Like,
yeah,
is it six a day, four a day?
So, remember. Should I count it? So, 9, 10, 11, 12, 2, 3, 4. So, there are six a day. Yeah.
Did you maximize? I went to six a day when I was there.
I could not go six a day. I wanted to sit and reflect, you know. I obviously picked the ones that I really liked, which happens to be the user experience related ones.
Mm-hmm.
So the internationalization, and I tried to say that really quickly
which
once.
Which is really easy now, right?
They've made some improvements, which mm-hmm. means that it's easier for us to continually internationalize our app. So if you've got a version of the app that you've already localized to say French, mm-hmm. the next time you want to localize, say, a new feature, you can do that more easier than what it was in iOS 7.
Mm-hmm. So is that just language or what other things can you internationalize?
Well, internationalize. I tried to say that fast to an Apple developer and they just laughed at me. is to prepare it for
localization.
For localization. And to localize it just means that you can change obviously the user text, so you know, and also the date time format, maybe some currency formatting, also language direction, so text direction,
right?
Also images. So some imagery actually means different things in a different region.
Like culturally.
No, like for example, a stop sign in Australia is not the mm-hmm. same as a stop sign in Japan. And so you'd like to use the right imagery to mm-hmm. To convey that same message.
For your traffic app.
Yes.
I always look at my app to make sure there's a stop sign.
What is that? What is that thing?
What is that thing? Quick, look it up, look it up, look it up. Yeah,
yeah. I have to ask, whenever you watch the videos for a WWDC session, they're always really slick. Did you see any non-slickness when it was being, you know, live in front of you?
No, it's pretty slick.
Just all polished.
It was like I was watching TV. Yeah.
Well, what I've seen a couple of times is the presenters know they're being recorded, so they wait until kind of they've finished their presentation, and then and that's when the recording stops, and then they go, I'm not meant to say this, but that example didn't work, and it's really cool, and you should come and see me.
I've never seen that.
That means all the demos went well.
Yeah. It was really enjoyable, though, like to go to the actual sessions. And
can I just
someone's got to talk about this.
The office is heading off to a social event, and we've just had the lights turned out on us. They clearly
Welcome
forgot
to
we were here.
After dark.
Seriously. Oh, after dark.
After dark.
After the conference.
Yeah. So, Mika, I'm being pushed into asking you questions. So, what happens outside the conference? I'm told there are actually other things that
there
you can
are.
Go to.
There are. Well, if you're interested, there is a site called WWDC Parties, and the whole, I guess...
Networking events, I think you meant to say.
So the idea is you could, while you're in San Francisco, there are a lot of tech companies in the area that you could... you can get involved with, you can come to their offices, speak to their developers, speak to their other employees, and get a feel about what technology is like, I guess, in San Francisco. Bjorn and I went to a few. We went to some different ones as well. So, yeah.
Tell us, what did you go check out?
Okay. Let me think. So I remember
WWDC Girls.
Yes. So I went to WWDC Girls.
That was the best. Oh, let me think. Mika told us before the show. She's like, I know I could remember yesterday, but I've had a hard day.
So WWDC Girls holds events each. I guess WWDC, and they held one last year.
Really?
This year, they had a lunch and also a fundraising event for App Camp for Girls. So, I went to that, which was really good. But before that, I went to a Apple-hosted or organized meetup for women in technology. So, that was really fun.
Was that full of like female Apple employees as well?
There were a lot of female Apple employees, but also a lot of WWDC attendees who were female. Uh-huh. And it was quite astonishing because I was there for at least 3 days walking around, and all I could see were men. And apparently there were like female lines to the toilets, but I've never seen one because I would go straight in.
Okay.
And so when we had this meetup of all these... all these women who are attending WWDC, I was shocked, but I was really happy and excited. I'm like, look at all these women. Look, why didn't I see you on Monday so that I could be talking to you like for the last 3 days? So I was pretty excited. Yeah, really happy.
Did you, so in like I always sort of, whenever I'm in a session when I have been in a session at WWDC, I'm always kind of looking around and trying to note the ratios of, you know, how many men, how many women. And I feel like if there's a row of like, 10, 20 guys, there'll be like one woman. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of what you saw?
Yes, but maybe even less than that. So maybe two rows of guys and one woman. Mm-hmm. But I suppose a good thing, like I noticed there was at least one woman speaker, like an Apple speaker, like presenting a session. And later I got to meet her at the Yelp office. And got to talk to her, and because she presented on a topic I really cared about, I was like really excited. Like, look, here's a woman who works at Apple who does things that I care about, and that's great. Yeah.
As long as you didn't ask her for a job, that's fine.
Anyway.
Segue. Yeah.
Do you think, so on that, you know, the ratios that you're talking about, what do you think it was similar to what we have in Melbourne? I mean, in out where we don't have
We definitely have three female iOS developers and one Android developer.
It's kind of similar ratio.
Yeah, is it about 1 to 7? 1 to 7?
Yeah.
I think that's pretty good because I actually met another female developer from Melbourne who was an iOS developer, and I've never met her before. And I pretty much know most of the iOS developers in Melbourne. Female developers in Melbourne. And I was really excited that I finally get to meet one, but I happened to meet her on the other side of the world.
It's ironic, yeah.
So, Mika, what at the meetup, at the Women in Technology meetup, what did you discuss or what was it about?
So part of it was pretty much networking. We spoke about, what we did and how, like, I guess the iOS apps and features that we enjoyed about. Right. But the other thing, I guess, which was more important was how to get women into technology.
Yep.
Yeah. So I guess having WWDC girls, having these fundraising events kind of highlights that, yeah, there are women in technology. It's not a scary place. It's actually a place where women can enjoy themselves, find passion in it.
Yep.
And, yeah, I think that's...
So how did you get into technology?
Wow, this is weird because last night I also went to a meetup in Melbourne about women in technology as well.
I'm noticing a theme.
And, I guess I spoke about the same topic. So I was saying that I only got into development really late in my career. I've never found anyone, any women in technology to inspire me to get into development or into the techie stuff, and the only people who I guess I'm exposed to are like the lecturers who talk about algorithms and
algorithms
and electrical circuits. There was
sorting
nothing. there was nothing to like really be passionate about until now, where we talk about let's make bird hatch out of an egg and it flies around. That's your Twitter client. Let's have us building an origami sheet and make it flap across the screen. These things, these magical things that we have on our phones or our computers, they're what I guess inspires passion. I guess Apple was one of the companies that brought to light how great software can be. And I guess that's why I moved from what I was doing before to what I'm doing now.
It's really cool. I think hearing you talk about the, raising money for the camp for girls and stuff is really, I think it's really exciting. A couple of years ago, the Young Australian of the Year, I think her name was Marita Cheng, something like that. I'm really bad at names. She was this amazing advocate encourager of girls in technology. And she's actually started a couple of programs to get young girls interested and passionate about technology. And I remember 2 years ago thinking, oh, God, I wish that was around when I was a kid because I think I would have loved it. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, we're about the same age. And I remember what computers meant to us back then, and it's not as sexy or as fun as what it is now.
I think you made a really good point about the role models. Like, it's like Mark Zuckerberg, Steve Jobs, Bill Gates. They're not good
female role models.
They're all like white men, right? Like
Craig Goodhair.
Yeah. Craig Federighi. Yeah. All those people that kind of are famous as tech visionaries or whatever, you know, they all fit that sort of mold. So we need to change that.
I think Outwear's doing pretty well. I think, we've got people who are really excited, and I think that's our main hiring criteria is that you're excited about technology and passionate. It's not about anything else, really.
And competent.
Competence. Well.
Mika, you talked about, I don't know if you want to talk about this on the podcast, but you talked about you were so inspired that you kind of want to go into UX again.
Oh, right. Oh my God, I can't believe we're talking about this.
Believe it.
Hey, Tan, I just want to let you know maybe Mika is interested in joining UX again.
Right. So
heads up.
I guess for the listeners, Before I became a developer, I was actually a user experience designer for mobile apps or mobile technology. And it got to a point where, yes, I guess on the iOS platform, there wasn't too much more that I could design for it. And with this keynote and with everything they've announced, I know that all of my developer colleagues are so excited about Swift and excited about a new programming language. But all I was thinking about was, oh my God, there's so many new user experiences I could be designing. There's all of these things that are available now that we didn't have before. And, well, Keith, this is for you. I know that Android has had all of these features before. iOS has finally caught up, and we're now able to like make all of these inter-device, inter-experience. It's now possible, and I'm really excited to be part of it. But I'm not sure if I want to sit on the developer side and you know, code all of this out and deliver it. I want to be on the design side and make sure that the experience we actually get are great ones.
And so you think the technology that's been announced at this year mm-hmm. is actually going to have a really significant impact on the way that apps work and work together?
Yep. So
the continuation, do you actually think that's going to have a big impact?
Yes. So I think, I don't know how he called it, continuity? Continuity.
So, marketing.
Yeah. I guess the examples they had were you're on your your laptop and you're working on something, and then you can move off and you're on your phone or on your iPad and vice versa. And I'm just thinking, look, these apps or these applications used to be in their own silos. We mm-hmm. used to design them to work in one place and one place only. Now we have to think about, well, which part of these apps, which of these features actually makes sense for us to pass on and to share. So it will be really interesting what the designers out there and the developers out there come up with, and what are really great user experiences and what maybe we should avoid. But it will be an interesting year, I guess.
So you think it could actually change the way we make software, because instead of thinking about platforms so much, we're thinking about experience irrespective of platform.
Yep. Mm.
Do you think that's actually going to happen? Like, are we on the dawn of some new... I going to change my name to being software dev to like... Oh, no, instead of iOS dev, I'm just a Apple experience... developer.
Yeah, why not? Why not, Kent?
I'm going to cross out my business cards and scribble that in.
Yes, I think it will be, because there will be people like me, people like Outware or companies like Outware who are thinking about this now, thinking about what are we doing outside of just making apps? You know, how to get value out of, you know, our lives or not our lives, but the devices we have, how to enrich our lives with these experiences or software.
I think one place, this is maybe a little bit geeky, but one place I can see like a really hard sort of obvious improvement, and we didn't mention this on the last podcast about WWDC because we were kind of sleep deprived and like, oh my God, look at all this stuff. But yeah, like Keith said, now that it's marinated, the stew is ready to consume.
It took me a while to write that in everything.
So. I think the continuation with Touch ID is going to be really significant. So the fact that we now have, if you have a newer phone, you've got Touch ID, so you've got that thumbprint scanning. Apple's opened up that API, and you've also got a closer connection between your Mac and your phone. So if instead of remembering all the passwords on my computer, I could just go, hey computer, listen to my authentication app on my phone. There, I just put my thumbprint on my phone, and now my computer, like any computer really that my phone is on the same network as, I can authenticate. It doesn't even have to be a computer I own. They just have to be talking to each other.
Yeah. And we were talking about how exciting it would
be. It's huge.
To like maybe, for example, write a shopping list on our Mac laptop, and then we go to the store with our phone and the shopping list is there, and then we're paying for it, and we're just authenticating with, say, something with a technology like Touch ID. So... again, it's talking about developing these new experiences that we would have never been able to do before now. So it's good to see.
But could Could Android, I guess Android has that, but there's not the desktop operating system to back it up. Is that kind of the distinction?
It's Google want to look at, if you have multiple devices, Google is banking on the fact that you're running Chrome on all these devices.
That's their glue.
Yeah, their experience around Chrome is very good with handing off type functions. I mean, the Chromecast is the biggest example because it is just running Chrome.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the direction Google are taking. It's really interesting that both Apple and Google are kind of both taking this direction where they want to get more into different aspects of your life. They don't just want you just on your phone making phone calls and tweeting people and at your desk working. They want, when you're going shopping or you go out for a jog, they want to not just play you your favorite OM podcast.
Plug.
Which episode is my favorite? I don't know.
Episodes 8, 10. but they want to also kind of gather all your health metrics and they want to track all those. And then you go into the shop and you buy a drink and they want to track that you've bought a drink and help you with that and be part of that part of your life as well. And
great.
People will be more like you and get kind of have form better attachments, more attached to their phone.
But I'm not thinking about phones as devices anymore. Oh, I'm not thinking about individual
devices. Distinctively. Yeah.
Because it feels like more an extension of my life. So one thing that came out from the announcements is, you know, messages app, you can now like raise to talk and raise to listen. So it's not about me like explicitly tapping on my device saying, hey, now I want to type something in. Now I want to, record a voice anymore. There are things that I'm doing based on my gestures or based on my intent. Capture my voice. Let me know. Let me listen to a message. So it feels like it's kind of extending out outside of just me telling the device, and more like I'm naturally doing something. I'm naturally want to do something. Listen to it. Respond to my gestures or respond to what I'm doing, and just work for me. So
I mean, it does sound a little hippie, but we're basically saying. We're not thinking about this machine and this computer that's working for us. It's just like an extension of the person. Like,
yes.
It's just people are sending information around.
Mm. This is really interesting because I went to a conference recently, the Mumbrella.
WWDC?
Not quite, but just as exciting for marketers in Australia. It was the Mumbrella 360, which is probably one of the biggest marketing conferences in Australia. And one of the speakers was talking about mobile or the internet, really, but how he was saying that we have to stop thinking about mobile as a platform or a media channel. We have to think about mobile as infrastructure. So it sounds a lot like what you're saying, Mika, and it's something that it's kind of embedded itself into our society, and it's like electricity. Everything doesn't work without it anymore.
It's the glue. So do you think, you know, Apple's announced HomeKit and HealthKit, and that's really good examples where they're trying to like wedge themselves into this new space. Like, health hasn't been an area that Apple's dabbled in at all. And suddenly they're going, we're the platform. We're the thing that gets your information from you to your doctor, you know, over to the specialist and gets all your information coming through. Is that a good thing that Apple's trying to get in and be this?
I don't know. It's a bit scary.
Don't you think?
Well, I can, It's a new experience, and if we, I suppose, take responsibility in designing a very good experience, and I think, I have a scale step on top of it, and it takes my weight. It records it on an app, not on my phone, but somewhere, because it's everywhere now. And then I go to my doctor, and he knows exactly what I'm weighing right now and whether I'm underweight or overweight. It's I don't know who's designing these experiences now, but we've kind of allowed ourselves to be this way. And it's going to get, I feel like we're heading into that future. So now is kind of like the time when we figure out exactly what we should do, not what we can do, like Apple's made it available, but what should we do?
So in a way, it's like an obligation. Is it kind of where actually, if as developers we're given, you know, power, that's probably the wrong word, but we have a big impact on, say, how your health, private health information gets from you to whoever. So there's actually sort of a responsibility on us. You know, we're not just making a fun game mm-hmm. to pass the time, or we're not just making another Twitter client so that you can get your tweets in a more nicer, user-friendly way. We're actually sort of dealing with, you know, serious, very important, sensitive data. And there's a responsibility for us to do that in a meaningful way.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. This is getting heavy. Burden of responsibility.
Who watches the Watchmen?
I'm surprised nobody has quoted Spider-Man yet.
Go on. You know you want to.
No, I don't.
Well, you mentioned Swift before, like all the dev excitement. Do you think we might, you know, Swift, the new programming language, do you think it might be one of those buzz things where we're all going to be really excited about it for a couple of months and then reality is going to kick in and we're going to be like, well, all our existing code bases are in Objective-C. We're not actually going to be, you know, not our code won't magically become Swift overnight. Was there a sense that, were people talking about that at WWDC? Were they kind of being like, when are you going to actually start using Swift?
I didn't feel like people thought about that aspect.
Yeah, they were just excited.
They were just excited. Like, this is an awesome new programming language. And already I think people have started creating small projects using Swift only. I suppose it's something for us to consider. I mean, usually what happens is you have Dub in June where they announced the new SDK. And then you have about, you know, 3 months, mm-hmm. three-ish months to kind of get ready for it. You've got the beta for 3 months, try it out, and then start thinking about reality. start doing, like, you know, growing up business now. So for us, we have started talking about it in our developer tech huddles. We know that it's a risk right now for some of our projects to start thinking about it because it's still in beta.
Hmm.
But at the same time, we want to stay ahead. So we've had some thoughts about what we can do. And I think it's important for us to get up to speed with Swift, to figure out what its limitations are and what we can do with it, and make that assessment on real projects.
Yeah, Gideon, our sort of head of engineering, one of our directors, he's sort of focused on that. He's like, how can we make this transition in the best way possible where, you know, we can't afford, as a technology company, we can't afford to be like 3 years behind, you know, the head of the curve because all the resources will be in the latest technology. And Apple's actually, I feel like with iOS, they've really pushed the industry to keep up. So they've kind of created this culture because each year they bring out the new version of iOS. They've created this culture where people are expected to be at the pretty much the bleeding edge all the time. I mean, you look at the adoption rates and they've got the data to back them up. They've got, like, you know, this huge adoption rate for iOS 7. Assumedly, it will just naturally follow on to iOS 8. So there's definitely this expectation that we need to get there sooner than later.
Yeah. And, you know, just to go on from there, like, I came back from Dub and I went back to my office, opened up my laptop, and I'm like, okay, I'm coding in Objective-C. And I know that this code isn't going to last long. It has an expiration date. The only problem is I don't know when Apple's going to flick the switch and say no more Objective-C.
Yeah.
So everything I write right now is legacy code.
Do you have a guess on how long that's going to be? Or do you think ever? Like, they don't have to turn it off.
I suppose they don't have to, but there's going to be a point where it might be too expensive to support both.
Mm-hmm.
Not just from, you know, the resources they have to support both languages, but their employees as well will have to, you know, focus on what's new. They won't have too many looking back.
Yeah, on the podcast where we talked about Dub, I thought maybe, you know, in 2 years' time, they're going to kind of turn off Objective-C. But having thought about it, like, I mean, I don't know enough about how the compiler works and what implications it has supporting these different languages. But, you know, we've been able to compile C and Objective-C forever. Why wouldn't they just keep Objective-C around? Mm. And they don't have to port the newest APIs to Objective-C. So, you know, maybe for iOS 9, all the new APIs will only be written in Swift. Mm. And if you want to use them, you need to use Swift, which is fair enough. But all your existing code, if you've written code from 2010 and it's written in Objective-C and it's this neat little library and it's self-contained and it works, maybe there's no need to ever stop that from compiling.
I suppose from Apple's point of view, they might not have to turn it off. But from a developer's point of view, like I know that when I think about, I guess, students graduating from iOS
courses
yeah. right? Do you think the lecturers would be teaching in Objective-C or will they be teaching in Swift? So when you hire them, you want them to work in Swift. So you don't want to burden them with, I guess, an older library that's, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. Like, what does happen to all the iOS dev courses? Like, essentially, yeah.
There's a lot of books out there that, that just got like cut down to 10%. Well,
back in my day, we learned Ada at university.
I used to work in Ada, but I sure never learned it.
Never used it.
So all of our interviews now will be conducted in Swift, and all of the employees at Outwear will be re-interviewed.
So does that mean you're doing all the interviews? Because I certainly haven't learned Swift yet.
Even the Android devs learn Swift.
Mika, there's one super geeky topic, geeky for iOS devs, self-sizing table cells. Keith and Luce, just tune out for a minute. Have a little drink. You raised this as one of the things you're most excited about.
I know. This is, pretty geeky. You know, of all the things that I enjoyed the most during DubDub, this is probably... close to the top. It's self-sizing table view cells. So what this means
sounds
is in most apps, it's very common that you would have a table or something that shows a list of items. And one of those items is a table cell or a row. And the problem is to get the rows to size the way they are, it sometimes takes us a lot of manual effort to set the height and the width depending on the content. Now with iOS 8, it's so easy for us to just say, hey, here's the title of this this maybe article, here's the content of the article, size yourself, and voila, magic happens and the row is as tall as it needs to be.
It's we're so speaking to the developers, because if you're listening to it conceptually, you're like, well, duh, obvious. But every single iOS developer has like, you know, shed tears over...
we have to calculate the font width, the font height, the how many lines we need to fit in there. If you have multiple labels, how the labels meant to sit next to each other, and then add them all up. But then... next time you update the content and we have to recalculate all of this again. Tears of blood.
There was some kind of operating system that could handle that.
It was totally the chicken and egg thing. You were like, how big does your cell need to be? I'm like, I don't know. Well, I haven't made my cell yet. And they're like, yeah, but how big does it need to be? I'm like, okay, I'll make my cell so I can tell you how big it is. Oh, I just made my cell. Well, here it is. It's made anyway.
Next frame, how big does your cell need to be?
I was excited when you told us that.
And as an Android developer, we had that a long time ago.
Shut up.
I thought I'd allow myself one. I let myself one. Okay, now that I've wrestled control, I'd like to pose a problem that I can see happening. With all the new and shiny WWDC things taking up all of our spare time, we go home and we have to do the dishes or cook food. No, we're just going to be playing with Swift and self-sizing table cells.
Priorities.
Priorities, exactly. So Apple's thought of this, though. They've brought out HomeKit. Just quickly round the table.
Yes.
We'll start with Luce. What do you want to see from Apple's HomeKit? You can go as crazy as you like.
I could, but really, this is the sad thing. I have a lot of trouble opening my garage door when I drive home at night. So all I want is that when I get to the gate of my estate, that my garage door automatically opens because it knows that my phone has entered the barrier near enough to my...
This is proximity.
Can I just point out that you just acknowledged that you live in an estate?
I do.
like a
development estate.
Okay, okay.
Like where all the houses are the same and the cookie cutter.
Right, I have to go last. So someone else.
It's got a doozy. Mika.
Oh. I want some intelligence around how much electricity my house uses. So if all of my power outlets are connected to some kind of device, I want to say you are only allowed to use, I'll set a daily threshold maybe of like X kilowatts per day. And if you hit 80%, then all of these devices should be powered off. So I want a smart auto.
I've got it. You're watching TV and your HomeKit thing's like, oh, it's nearly used its daily threshold. So I'll just turn it off every second and turn it back on. So it's like on for 3 seconds, off for 3 seconds.
Well, the TV won't be connected to those outlets. It will be things like the microwave.
Non-essentials.
Yeah. Things I don't use every day. The fridge, my oven.
The automatic garage door opener at Luce's house next door. Yes. Things like that. I can see that working. Yeah.
What about you, Keith?
For me? Well, I wouldn't buy the HomeKit. I would go with Google's superior implementation.
We Googled this yesterday. What was...
they bought Nest.
Google at Home or something? No, there's a thing they announced like 4 years ago. And they're like, hey, guys, we've solved it. We're going to get your home talking to each other. And they had the little Android with all the devices, all your home appliances around it. Next year at I.O., they were just like, We never talked about that.
I was just ahead of its time.
That was someone else. Yeah, it wasn't us. Anyway, assuming Google has an amazing competitive option
and it's cheap, I would want some kind of media center integration that knows where I am in the house, which is kind of creepy.
And like plays your music. Yeah, there
plays
or something.
Plays my music. Just if I go have a shower, play music in there. If I go, am I cooking dinner? Play music in there. And if I'm watching a movie, it just turns off the phones.
It's like Bill Gates' house. Bill Gates has had this in his house for like 20 years.
Yeah, and he's Microsoft.
For the masses. Yeah.
Yeah, I want Bill Gates' house. That's what I want.
That's all.
That's all. That's
I just live in an estate.
The automatic door.
Ask me what I want.
Kent, what would you like to see from Apple's HomeKit?
Nothing.
What? You don't want to buy an Apple product?
No, I was talking about this. Like the way my house is set up, I don't actually have that many appliances. I have like my TV and my fridge. My fridge needs to stay on all the time. My TV, I probably want to control when that turns on and off. I'm okay with that. We have remote controls, people. I can sit on the couch and turn my TV
on
and off.
If you can't find the remote?
But you can say, Siri. Hey Siri, lock my doors. Or, hey Siri, open Pete Talbot's door.
So they live together in your world.
I don't know.
Hey Siri, turn on the webcam at Pete Talbot's house.
Zoom in, Siri.
Pete, if you're listening, I miss you.
We all miss you.
Seriously, though, like I feel like my house, if my house is a kind of standard-ish house, there's not that much need for this yet. I don't have like 100 devices that are all like squawking out like IP network signals going like, hey, listen to me, look, I just want someone to talk to, and there's no one, there's no like iPhone running HomeKit that I can talk to.
They're not real humans.
They are in my mind. So I guess what I'm saying is, personally, I think we're a couple of years off till this HomeKit thing will sort of come into its own. But that, I mean, that's technology. You need to have early adopters and that's how these things work. But I'm just saying, personally, I think for me, I can't see a use for it yet.
But you're
Can I change my answer?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I want HomeKit to work with my robot and make me dinner every time I get home.
Wait, you have a robot?
No, but if I had one.
assuming
come with a robot.
Assuming that Google's going to bring out dinner-making robots at I.O., you would want this to talk.
Apple won't integrate with Google's robots.
They might, if we're lucky.
I'm a developer. I can maybe.
Bridge the gap. Do you really want to hack your dinner-making robot that uses sharp knives and frying pans?
It's probably as safe as me cooking.
I like it. No, I think it's a very good idea. Now, I want a dinner-making robot.
that you can hack.
It's going to be the title of the show.
The dog. Just do a bunch of other tasks. Change the baby dinner robot. Put away knives.
No, dinner robot.
I've derailed myself. I think we've successfully wrapped up WWDC in a nice, cute little alfoil swan. See, there's the food analogy. I'll call it out. So we can now take it home and we can gorge ourselves on self-sizing table cells and home automation that
yummy garage doors.
Look, huge thanks to Lucia and Mika for sharing your wisdoms with us.
Thank you. No worries.
Thank you. And
what about me?
I'm going to thank
you. Okay.
And thank you to our super beardy producer, Andy. I was going to take the piss out of him for leaving, but he stayed the whole time. So he stayed with
us. Scratch that.
And big thank you to my co-host and safety net, Kent. So, Kent, this is your last show for a while. Do you have any closing statements for the viewers?
It is. You're gonna be flying without a safety net next week.
I know. It's just going to be dead air.
Talbot will be back. It'll be fine. Yeah. In case anyone wasn't listening 2 weeks ago, I'm heading off to the UK for about 16 months. That's the current plan. I'm just trying to avoid winter. I'm going to try and follow summer around the globe for a little while. But I'm so proud of the OWN podcast. I really genuinely love listening to it, and it's not because I love listening to my own voice. When I listen,
love you too.
I love that too. It's not only nice that. just when I listen back, I love that you can just hear how much we're all excited about mobile and how much we enjoy working together. So if any Outwarians are listening, you're the best. And I'll still be listening while I'm overseas. That's the best thing about a podcast. You can listen to it anywhere.
And give feedback.
And you just got one more listener, so.
Yeah. Excellent. And speaking about feedback, we still have the questionnaire out there and going?
Yeah, I don't know the URL.
There's a URL. It's in the show notes. You've forgotten everything already. You just brain wiped just then.
Kent's just let go.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much.
Twitter. People can feedback us on Twitter.
I'm new to this. Okay, we have a Twitter handle. I didn't ask you beforehand, but Mika, can you tell all the lovely people playing at home what our Twitter handle is?
Yes, it's at Outware, OUTWARE.
Pro. Very good.
I came prepared.
Thank you for having us.
Ciao.
Thanks.